Hi, I'm Pratik.
I'm Garish.
And I'm Raghu. And we're Pemmasala, the world's first South Asian acapella group. And you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Yeah. My name is Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with talented and interesting individuals linked to the global Indian and South Asian community. It's informal and informative, adding insights to our evolving cultural expressions, where each person can proudly say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. Hi, everyone. On this episode of Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing, we share a conversation with members of the a cappella group Pemmasala. Stay tuned. Once again, thank you for listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing and sharing it with your friends and family, and for following us everywhere on that good old social media. If you're enjoying these episodes, please take a moment to submit a kind rating and review wherever you might be listening or watching, as it's very much appreciated. So after beginning with church music in Europe and then gaining popularity in the US in the late 1800s and early 1900s, a cappella music has a unique kind of charm. Since you don't need instruments, you just need humans. It's an instant community builder, as you just need to gather at least a few voices to make some simple harmonies. And best of all, since there's no equipment involved, it's basically free. So, you know, free, humans, and gathering, the basic ingredients of a successful college party. And so it's no surprise that the a cappella art form is immensely popular on college campuses. It's certainly been buoyed, of course, in recent years by lots of pop music offerings and movies like Pitch Perfect, but has some fairly broad appeal amongst the generations. That's why it was pretty cool to talk to members of Pemmasala, the world's first and premier South Asian a cappella group. Since forming in Philadelphia in 1996 on the campus of the University of Pennsylvania, Pemmasala has been creating a cappella music with a Desi Western fusion, crossing cultural and musical boundaries and setting new ones for many others. From original compositions to Hindi-English mashups to blending pop, folk, R&B, jazz, rock, and of course so many South Asian influences, they've performed and toured in the US, the UK, and in India. Over the years, they've been featured in the Indian International Film Academy Awards and the Hollywood Feature Film and Soundtrack for Pitch Perfect 2. They've performed at the White House for Diwali, and this past summer at the state dinner hosted by President Biden for Prime Minister Modi. They've also released 12 studio albums, and their latest is called Midnight Oil. I caught up recently before school started with the group's president, Raghu Raman, the music director, Pratik Adurti, and the business manager, Gaurish Gaur, all singers in the group and all full-time students. We chatted about everything from the demands of student life to the camaraderie of past and current members to staying relevant in a music and college world filled with so many choices. But we started by chatting about their recent trip, aptly called Homecoming, this past May to perform in India.
Was there anything that seemed in some ways kind of fresh or surprising, especially after so many years away for Pemmasala and of course coming through the pandemic? Were there any kind of bright notes or surprises that were kind of unexpected for you all as a group?
Yeah, we actually got the wonderful opportunity to collaborate and meet some incredible Bollywood artists. A few of them, Shankar Mahadevan, he actually came onto stage and sang Mithva with us on our last show of our India tour. That was just like a really, really special moment for everyone in the group to sing with one of our idols. You know, we've listened to his music, we've covered his music, now we get to sing with him. So that was really, really fun. We were able to record some music and do some collaborations with other artists like Vijay Prakash and Shankar Mahadevan's kids as well, like Shivam Mahadevan and Siddharth Mahadevan. Yeah.
And to sort of add on to Raghu, in terms of like performances, so we perform a lot in the US for colleges mostly. So the people that we sort of perform to are like Indian college kids. Yeah. And one thing that was like insane in India was every single song that we performed, they knew like every single lyric. So both just the Hindi stuff, the Telugu stuff, the Tamil stuff, as well as the English. In America, when we mostly perform, you can hear people sing like the English songs mostly, but a lot of people don't really know some of the older Hindi songs that we sing. Yeah. So it was just an amazing environment. Everyone, like we didn't have to sing a lot of the songs that we were doing on stage. We could just like put the mic in front of somebody and they would just know everything.
Sort of like everybody's a super fan. Almost.
Yeah, sort of. You could say that. Yeah, I'd say India is like our main audience too. So it was just like awesome coming back home. You know, that was why the tour was called Homecoming. So,
but was that a surprise at all? I mean, especially given the fact that like, wow, this not. I mean, these people know us And our songs backwards and frontwards too.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of crazy that we heard from a lot of fans that they've been waiting. Like you know, they didn't forget about us since like the last, I think it was 7 years since we haven't been in India. Like, people have been waiting for Pemmasala shows, and now that we're back, they were so excited to see us back again. And that was really memorable as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think, as you already mentioned, Pemmasala has toured India in the past, but, you know, due to the COVID pandemic, it has been delayed for such a long time. I know Raghu already said, like, I think it's around 6 years since our last India tour. And, you know, you always hope that, obviously, the fans are still there, you know, active on social media, but they haven't had the chance to have in-person experiences for, like, so many years. Before almost any of us were, or actually before any of us were actually in the group during our four-year tenor. So actually seeing our fans, and some of them, you know, have been fans since like the 90s or, you know, since early 2000s, who like first listened to us like on some old radio show, and how they're still showing and coming to support us and talk to us after shows, really getting to interact with them, you know, sing with them maybe one extra song. It's really just an amazing experience, I think, to like directly interact with fans.
You know, aside from people, you know, knowing the lyrics and you know, sort of right, holding up a mic up against to somebody and they can basically sing, let the song sing themselves, so to speak. I'm curious, what's the biggest difference, you know, or even for that matter, similarity between an audience that's in Goa and say an audience that's at Irvine Auditorium?
I don't know. I think for a lot of us, coming to India and performing was even more special because we could perform in front of our family and relatives that, you know, a lot of us haven't seen in a long time. And we always send them videos of what we're doing in Pemmasala, like practice, music videos and stuff. We send them that stuff, but they never get to see us perform live because we're based in Philly. So being able to, you know, for me, perform in front of my grandparents, that was a super special moment. And yeah, something I'll never forget.
Yeah, one thing that's sort of interesting about the way that we sort of like do our shows is we have like three sets. So we have like a first set, which is kind of like an intro into Pemmasala. The second set is like kind of slower. It's more like lyrical focused. And the third set is like super, super high energy. Usually when we're in the US, we perform this third set to like the highest level that we possibly can. And that's like the focus of the show, really. Like the third set is like, oh my God, it's the party. It's like all of the energy of Pemmasala. That's the set that we focus on. In India, I would say that the Garish and Raghu, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the most appreciated set was the second set, which was a lot more lyrical, a lot slower, but like a really strong focus on musicality. And I think there was just like, there's just like a deeper appreciation for the music rather than just going to a show and just like screaming your head off and just like singing along with, you know, Pemmasala. It's more of just like, oh wow, I'm going to a show, I'm experiencing the music and I love the music. You know, it's kind of like that rather than just party, 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 which is kind of like how it is in America. So
I'm curious if that requires, by the way, a different empathy for, you know, from the audience, for the audience, where the preparation, you know, for a show like that, whether you're an audience member or a performer, where it's just different, right? Whether it's in India or the UK or performing in front of your grandparents, performing in front of your peers, is there a relatively different empathy involved?
Yeah, I think like one thing we always do in preparing for every show is we really like to personalize it to the audience we're performing at. So like in the US, we focus on, you know, songs that are popular here. Whereas I think in India, we performed this this one Tamil song in Bangalore. And that was really, really good. And then we performed a Telugu song when we performed in Hyderabad. So like being able to, you know, customize our set list to the audience we're performing for is usually really nice.
Yeah, I think what was really interesting is not just customizing the set list, but also how we do our performance. You know, there are certain cases where like a three distinct sets would not really work for an audience that's like, you know, like at a concert and is ready to hear it all, or like waiting to hear like another extra song that we are unprepared for. So always being able to think on our feet, you know, add an extra song that the fans want to like rehear or hear that from our like, you know, albums, or, you know, knowing how to change up how we're performing to meet like the audience is definitely something that was different for the tour.
Yeah, and one thing I wanted to add was in the US, primarily we do a lot of shows at colleges. And this was not, we didn't do a single college show during this homecoming tour. And we had like a really wide variety of types of shows and types of audiences. And what I mean by that is we had one performance at the NCPA, which is a really, really distinguished auditorium, and performing for some really distinguished guests. And then we also like performed at a nightclub the day after. So that variation was like really, really, it kept things exciting, kept things going.
Yeah, I mean, like the audience itself is probably a little bit more spread out as far as age and even perhaps those people who have known your music for a long time, as opposed to even first time listeners and people who are kind of exploring Pen Masala in that way. I'm curious, for all three of you are, you know, hold a leadership role in Pen Masala, and I'm thinking a little bit about a cappella, you know, sort of as a vehicle itself. It seems like it's among the ultimate team expressions, right? When it comes to music. And how does, you know, you mentioned, Godish, the sort of spontaneity of like, hey, you know, reading an audience and trying to sort of like weave with an audience as you get the vibe, you know, from it. But how does preparation and practice and even sort of amping up as a group, as a team before a performance, how do you help get everybody on the same page, particularly when it comes to such an incredible team expression, like I mentioned, like a cappella?
I think there's a lot that goes into it, so I'm sure we can all speak about it. But there's so much that goes into it before the performance and even during the performance. You know, being able to notice like somebody's hand motions if they're telling you to like slow down, speed up, like increase your volume, or even just looking at other people around you for their expressions, trying to be more lively when you're performing. You know, even though we're so tired in a 2-week, you know, 6-city tour, everybody's exhausted, flying out at 6 a.m. But, right. You know, just trying to keep your energy up. And I think before the performance, one of my favorite traditions is when the president gives like a motivational speech to really amp up all the performers and be prepared to like, you know, to just give all our energy we possibly can to the audience.
Yeah, I think that like we have like a pre-show ritual, and like Raghu or I, we just like get everyone in a circle. Raghu says like some like super like hype words, and then we just like go out there on stage and we're just like feeling it, you know? I think like the way Masala works, the way I sort of think about it, it's kind of like a sports team. It's like you're all playing. It's not really a game. It's more like a gift. You're trying to like, you know, put on the best performance, but like the preparation, like the grind, the hard work, the intensity, and the diligence that we like all put into this group is something that like I would say like an athlete, even like the hours are kind of similar. We perform
right.
Or we practice like 9 to 12 pretty much every single weekday, and on the weekends we're traveling, which is like sort of similar to like a athlete's life in college as well. Yeah. So I'd say, yeah, I don't know. It's like, I think those pre-show rituals are amazing. We kind of run things just kind of like a sports team. So yeah.
I'm sort of thinking of like, you know, the college basketball team or the NBA team that's sort of huddled around and doing their thing
exactly,
right before a game, you know, gets out there. But, mm-hmm. you know, in some ways, kind of like the three of you probably also have to read the temperature of your team and sort of how that's going, you know, overall.
You're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. After a quick break, we'll come back to our conversation with members of the group Pen Masala. Stay tuned. Conversation. It's the antidote to apathy and the catalyst for relationships. I'm Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with global Indians and South Asians so everyone can say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. New episodes weekly, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hello, everyone. My name is Tam France, and you are listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Welcome back to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. Let's rejoin our conversation now with Pen Masala.
Because of the style that you're performing in, fusing and bridging styles itself takes a lot of rigor, right? And when you're thinking of arrangements, especially musically and creatively, I'm imagining that it's sometimes challenging not to pick a lane. So when you're thinking about like how to figure that out, does that sort of come naturally with time and experience and in some ways kind of constantly thinking about what the next arrangement is? Or are there times where you're just like, oh man, boy, this feels way, way too American or way, way too Indian?
I think like the awesome part about Masala is that it like rotates. Like every single 4 years, the group just completely changes. And with that, you have like so many different people and so many diverse music tastes that like, we kind of, our niche is kind of that we have eras where there's like a different sound. We have like, our niche is that we have such a wide variety of like sounds. like now we're kind of doing some R&B stuff. In the past, we focused on just like traditionally pop stuff in the West. We had some like, we had an era before that was like more rock oriented too. So it just kind of all changes. And I feel like masala, it's like masala literally is a combination of spices, right? It's like we're sort of like, our foundation is that we are diverse in our interests and we like, we find like, you know, power in that. So that's kind of like our, yeah, our mission. Yeah.
Yeah. I think like everyone in the group has like a different musical background. Some of us have Carnatic experience. Some of us have choir. Some of us haven't sang at all before coming to masala. But I think what makes masala work and why we love it is because everyone is able to find that one part, that one spice in the masala that they really identify with. And then they get to be a part of that and contribute in that way.
I was thinking of Rag Malhar, that, yeah, on this latest one, that seems like there's a lot of synergy and a lot of sort of power to that expression. And it, in some ways, it neither feels really on the fringe of either being a Western or an Eastern thing, but just about as important and as great of a blend of that as it gets.
100%. I like that song in particular. I think is like a masala favorite. We love that. So the first time that we finished that song, we all like came into the house and we were just like blasting it on the speakers, and everyone knew, like, yeah, because we just got out of studio, everyone knew all the background parts. Underrated part about masala is that experience. Like, you come right back from studio and then you're just like blaring the song and everyone's just screaming their head off. It's just such a fun time.
Yeah. I'm imagining that all this sort of sticks in your on your headphones for a long, long time afterwards.
Yeah,
definitely.
So Godish, I have a question for you. I at least was on the website. It says your favorite YouTube video is listed as 10 hours of silence. love that, by the way. So I mean, in all seriousness, I'm curious about how sometimes when you step away from Pen Masala and even how that actually works, and for that matter even how boredom can sometimes help, you know, refresh and reset and in many ways kind of energize a group like masala.
Thank you for the noticing the video. We always like to put some fun things to keep it interesting, but I think one thing really interesting about masala is it becomes a part of your college life. I'm sure everybody in the group agrees. We are spending so much time with the same people, not usually getting bored of them, but just like so much time in like one thing, you're so invested in it that even when you're stepping away, masala is running in your head like constantly. So, you know, for right. me as the business manager, it's not so much as coming up with like crazy mashups like these guys can, but coming up with like new performances, new, like always responding to people if they're reaching out, or like just coming up with new ways to like promote the brand, anything like that. And I think it's very important that one thing it's like really important to do is find that balance of like, you know, having time to work on music directly, but sometimes music comes out of your own boredom or own experiences that you can't necessarily just sit down and be like, hey, let's make music. It's more like a natural experience. And sometimes the best mashups we've come up with are like during road trips, for example. And Rugu, you can definitely speak about that more.
Yeah, yeah. So actually our latest music video, Fire Burning Chamak Cholo, we came up with that in one of our road trips. So someone was playing Fire Burning, and then I think another person just started singing Chamak Cholo on top of it. And we're like, oh my God, these songs go so well together. So that was a super memorable moment. I think when you talk about, you know, leaving the group, I think even when you leave the group, you graduate, you don't actually leave, right? It's like, we have really strong relationships with our alumni. They're always, you know, invested in us and interested in what we're up to. You know, we're talking to alumni from all the way from the founders. We met some of them in our India tour, and we, you know, obviously are in touch with our recent alumni, and they're all super helpful. We have like reunions every semester, pretty much.
I guess one clarification, and we're going to come back to talking about alumni in a second, because I worked down some quick notes about that. I guess when I meant leaving the group is like sort of like, hey, I'm still in masala, but perhaps I'm actually leaving my masala hat behind, and I'm going to be with either other people, other friends. Like, you know, at some point masala probably pervades every aspect of your life, but at the same time there must be moments of non-masala time, you know, silence almost, if you will. And I think Godish, what you were speaking about, and even Raghu, what you were speaking about, how that in some ways kind of in fact adds to your time and enhances the time you have with masala.
Yeah, I think like I completely agree. I think that like even this summer break is just like so, so good, I think, for us creatively, even though we're not like forcing content, just like having a break where we're just like consumers, you know, we're just, I'm either scrolling on TikTok, I'm like listening to new trends,
yeah.
I'm just listening to new music. I think all of us, music is like a pretty central part of our life. So I don't know if it's silence, but just taking a break from Masala and just seeing what other people are up to is like so important. Just getting inspiration. And yeah, I don't know. I feel like once the school starts, like we really, really just hit the ground running and it's just go, go, go. So just breaks are so, so important. And I completely agree. So
yeah I think like burnout is a pretty big thing for artists in general, which is something I didn't realize before coming. I see all these stars just continuing to pump out content, and it only struck me when I joined the group as to how difficult that really is to continuously make content after content. And I know about you're probably familiar with this as like you're creating this podcast and recording these things. Like it's hard to be consistent, and it takes a lot of effort. And so burnout is a real thing. And like Pratik said, this summer is really awesome. Gives us time to relax and think about non-Masala things for a change.
Absolutely. I mean, you're right. I think it's the consistency, like, you know, reigniting the passion that you have on a consistent basis and making sure that you're bringing your A game, being authentic and, you know, making sure you're doing what you love. Let me ask the three of you this in that way, you know, how has Masala made you all better students?
Rogu, you want to start with that?
Made me a worse student. No, I'm kidding. No,
I wasn't sure if that was a loaded question or not.
I mean, no. In all seriousness, I think Masala really forces you to be on top of your stuff, right? Like you're spending 3 hours a day doing practice, and oftentimes people have responsibilities outside of that 3 hours. So, you know, when you're not doing Masala stuff, you have to be on top of everything else that's going on in your life. So I've become really, really good at managing my time. And, you know, we're all friends. We all, you know, take similar courses. So whenever the courses align, we're always studying together, helping each other out. So apart from like the Masala music community, we also, you know, have a community with each other in the academic realm.
I think like also on like another note, I think Masala is probably like I've developed, like I feel like we talk about like team building skills like generally, and it's sort of like a cliche. It's kind of like vacuous, but I genuinely think I've become such a better like team player while in Masala. And like, because you're just, because I feel like with a, like a lot of team projects, like your heart's not really in it, right? You're just doing it because you're assigned. Yeah. In Masala, everyone like loves music and everyone has a creative vision. And just like navigating that, navigating so many different opinions and like that whole process, I think you really, really get a really good experience and develop really good skills in terms of just like resolving conflicts, in terms of like making sure that the group's still able to function, even though there is maybe like, you know, a creative disagreement. And sure. I think that that's such a valuable skill that you don't really get in anything really. I think it's really rare for like a club generally for people to like just like express how they feel about any aspect of the club. And I think Masala is super awesome because everyone's really, really honest with each other, with how they're feeling. They're super passionate about it. And man, it's just like you develop so much in that sort of environment.
Yeah, I think Pratik and Raghu answered it pretty much perfectly, like what I would say. The only thing I can really add is like knowing from taking a class with Raghu this past semester with another person also in that class, it's almost like a net you have where if you're ever, you know, stressed about a class, all of us have work to do or a lot of work to do even after practice. So we can always come together, you know, take time to study together, always help each other out. And I think that like supportive net, it extends beyond any other, like it's really hard to call Masala a club or describe it because it's not a club. It's like, it's not a sports team. It's not like a singing group. It's not like friends. It's like a collection of all of that where we're all supporting each other. We're working together. We're working towards a common goal. But at the end of the day, we really are just friends. And I think that's the best part of it.
Let me kind of go back to the idea of like even creating mashups and, you know, what you do when you're on a road trip, or even just like, again, you're a collection of friends in a in this great kind of like network together and kind of going through this journey together. Why should mashups and blending of pop or hip hop or rock type of stuff with Eastern melodies, why should those mashups matter to the purists in any of those, you know, art forms? You know, is there actual art that you're creating that's in fact making those purists even more pure? making those art forms even better?
I think if you like look at music history in general, I think like one trend that you sort of see is that anytime like a new genre pops up, it's really like an amalgamation of everything in the past and like derived in the, and from like a lot of those different inspirations, something new emerges. And I think like mashups are sort of similar. Even though like we're just taking like, you know, Western and Eastern together and we're just like putting them sometimes next to each other, there's like a beauty in it that's like, that's novel. Like we have like a lot of overlaps in our songs where we have like a Hindi chorus on top of an English chorus. And there's a way that like sort of Hindi melodies sort of bounce off of English things in a really interesting way, where you don't really hear that in like normal music in if you were sort of a purist. And I think that kind of overlap, that kind of interesting interplay between English just followed by Hindi is something novel. And I think it's like interesting. It would be interesting to purists. I think the hard thing is like sometimes it can be a little cheesy. It can sometimes be a little corny. Like you're trying to like force these two things together. So there is a balance, right? Yeah. In terms of making sure you're making music that's novel, innovative, but like not corny. But like that's like the struggle of Masala, I guess. That's like what we're always trying to do. So
yeah, no, that's, I mean, it's very elegant. And I wonder that like, you know, for most folks who are purists, then do they receive mashups and the blending of this kind of stuff? Have you found the reception of them saying like, wow, this is really innovative? Or is there sometimes even pushback that you feel? Like it's like, hey, you know what? It's not really either form, but you're at the same time creating your own lane.
So it's funny. I think like, so one thing I was sort of looking at recently was if you like look at some of our, so YouTube just did this feature where like if you hover over the bottom of like a YouTube video, you can see what's like the most viewed portion of a track. And what's interesting is for a lot of our songs, like the most viewed portion of the song, like the most listened to portion of the song, is actually that overlap. So I think that there is some demand for like that like novel interaction between like Western and Eastern stuff. I think that that is there. I will say there are purists. And I get them too, you know, like sometimes I just want to listen to a Hindi song. I don't want to like just listen to like a mashup. Like I get that. Right. And I think like we're sort of experimenting with that too. Like, so in the past we've made songs that have just been completely Hindi, completely English, because we can't really figure out, and we don't want to force something that's like, that's corny, as I said before.
Yeah.
So like we've messed around with just like focusing on one thing or the other, but yeah. So you guys can sort of jump into this if you want to.
Yeah, I think like in our India tour, we came across a lot of people who, interestingly enough, didn't listen to a lot of English music.
Yeah.
And so, but they would tell us that they would actually be exposed to a lot more English music than they would have if they wouldn't listen to our music, because we do a lot of mashups. And I guess like if I were to talk to a purist right now, what I would say is, even though we do a lot of covers and mashups, I think what makes Masala mashups special is that we're actually creating new music, right? We're not just overlaying melodies over the same background track. Like every single sound that you hear is a reimagined version of what you would hear in the original song. And I think that's what makes it special, and that's why I love our music, but I might be a little bit biased.
You're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. After a quick break, we'll come back to our conversation with members of the group Pen Masala. Every story told is a lesson learned, and every lesson learned is a story waiting to be told. I'm Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with global Indians and South Asians so everyone can say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. New episodes weekly, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hi guys, I'm Karan Barar. I'm an actor, director, and producer here in LA, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Hi there, I'm Abhay Dandekar, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. Let's rejoin our conversation now with Raghu, Pratik, and Gaurish, members of the group Pen Masala.
Question that definitely bounces off this whole purist idea. I mean, one thing of note, of course, is that Masala has always been a men's a cappella group. You know, is there an artistic or even a philosophical reason to perhaps include singers in general? Or is there some, you know, tradition that is important to uphold, or is that just kind of like, hey, this is the way it's always been? What's been maybe some of the thought around that, especially as, you know, kind of, again, times evolve, you know, the art evolves.
Yeah. So back when we were founded, back in what, 1996, all of our music for the past 25, 26 years has been written in the male vocal register. So we have like bass, baritone, tenor one, tenor two. And so those four voice parts, since we perform a lot of our older music as well as newer music, we kind of had to stick to that four-part system. And if we were to, you know, expand the group, that we wouldn't be able to perform our older music that we you know, cherish so much.
Yeah, and like I said this before, I think like I kind of think of Masala like a sports team, you know, and it's like there's like a sense of like brotherhood that we all sort of tie each other to. And like we're always looking to collaborate with like awesome female artists. We have like a all Indian a cappella group on campus. Currently, that's just all girls.
Yeah.
And so we're always looking to collaborate with them. But like, I don't know, there's like a sense of brotherhood and camaraderie that we kind of get, kind of like a sports team.
Sure.
That yeah. we feel and that we appreciate too. So yeah, it's like kind of both things. Yeah.
I think that's always a balance, right? I mean, like, how do you actually like make sure that you're thinking about legacy and tradition, but at the same time being really open to collaborating without sacrificing perhaps, you know, that same sense of brotherhood and camaraderie that's been, you know, so well developed over so many years. Thinking of that same sort of line where, you know, you all create and you're artists in many ways that are creating with a foundation. And that foundation really is very steeped in a whole lot of legacy and tradition, right? You're at an Ivy League institution. A cappella music has such a rich European and American choir tradition. Definitely, of course, all the traditions of Hindustani classical music, Bollywood music, Carnatic music, all of these have kind of rigorous histories and legacies that are quite rich and profound. So in thinking about Masala, how does Pen Masala create its own tradition, but particularly in a way that doesn't allow it to get old or even worse, irrelevant?
That's a good question.
I think it's a very interesting question. I think it goes back, for me at least, to the founding of Masala, where it created its own tradition from our founders who like saw that a cappella was such a huge space, but there was no South Asian a cappella scene like in the world. And really that want to like combine Eastern and Western culture was what created Masala tradition to begin with. And I think that's really what unites all of us who are in the current group, also in the past group, is we're shared by this sense of identity, I would say, where, you know, growing up in America, we all, you know, want to express not just our like Western identity, but also, you know, our Eastern identity of our parents, grandparents, and others in our family. I think that continues to evolve because stay up to date, because even though, you know, that principle was founded in 1996, a lot of us still have that same, you know, like, I would say like battle for our identity. And that's what motivates us to make new music.
Yeah, I think to add on to that, I think every generation or like iteration of Masala tries to add one new thing, right? So even just as the music landscape has changed over time in the way it's dispersed, right? Like initially we had like physical CDs and we would hand them out to people in crowds. And then, you know, things moved more towards like YouTube and we had a bunch of music videos on YouTube. And that's how we chose to express ourselves in music. And now it seems like a lot more like short form content, like Instagram and TikTok. And so as the music sphere has changed, kind of, we've adapted the way we've sent out our music, but I feel like we still stick to a certain level of tradition when it comes to our music. Although, you know, we're always trying to experiment and try new things when it comes to music.
I guess this is, it's sort of related. When I think of like tradition, I think of like Masala culture and sort of like internal culture, and I think that's like super super important. And I think like a lot of that is just maintained by like it's like sort of weird to say this, but like I feel like you spend so much time, just like it's just like a function of the time that you spend with each other, like because we're traveling all the time, because we're spending so many hours together, there's a culture that develops that just because of the time that we spend, that I think just like lasts so long. You all care so much about the art. Like every single new super exec, every single new president, music director, business manager just cares so much about this group. They just like really put everything into it. And I think that shows, and that's like sort of why the culture is like sort of maintained.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, all three of you for that matter. You know, I want to go back to this idea of alumni and leaving the group as we had, you know, kind of talked a little bit about earlier, but, you know, some of the alumni are now like me in their 40s and 50s. And I'm curious, what are some of the nuggets or some of the lessons that you've taken away now from, you know, talking to some of those folks about the history of Masala and kind of like what it means to you long term? Well, perhaps after you've left college.
I think the biggest lesson that we have this like gathering in the fall semester where a bunch of alumni kind of go through the history of Masala and all the key points. And I think one thing that always kind of sticks through is the amount of dedication and hard work that every alumni before us has put in. There's a story that one of our alumni told us that they were at the show and they'd just released an album. And this was before like, you know, like Google or like, you know, and YouTube or anything. And they would literally go door by door in the hotel, knocking on doors, asking if they wanted to listen to our music on the CD. And so just hearing that story and hearing about all the hard work that all these alumni have done to give us this platform that we are so privileged to have at this point, I think that's a big part that really makes us all motivated and push the group forward rather than, you know, let it die. I think COVID was like a big, kind of like a scare for the group where we weren't in person, weren't able to make new music. And it could have been this thing where Masala could have just died then. But because we have these strong relationships with our alumni, we kind of felt like we had to keep it going. We can't let it die. So yeah. I think that's part of what keeps us going.
I think like the best piece of, I completely agree with Raghu. I think like the best piece of advice that I got from an alumni was, it was just like, don't overthink it. You know, like you're in this group for 4 years, you were chosen in this group for a reason, trust in your abilities and don't overthink the music creation process because like you were chosen for a reason. And I think that there's like hearing that from an alumni, a lot of these alumni, we just like love, we think they're legends. Like just hearing that from a person, just like that they believe in you, it's just like so empowering, you know? So I think like that piece of advice and just being like present, just like just feeling like the music creation, just recognizing the music creation process is organic and it just happens spontaneously has been really important for me.
Yeah. And even like outside of like music or just like Pen Masala, I think alumni really help provide, at least for me, perspective on like the whole college experience, because like, I don't think it's like necessarily like the class or like the certain day or like a certain like assignment that really matters. When you're talking to alumni, it's about their experiences, like their journeys and what they can share and like being a part of a community that you can always look back to even when you're older and like returning like the favor that you were given. I think that's really inspiring. It's like giving you a wider perspective.
What it sounds like particularly is that it obviously permeates well beyond the lessons that are learned in Masala, but you know, a lot of things even sort of outside and kind of for your personal and professional lives sort of going forward. In thinking about all this together, right? We've talked about the music, we've talked about the performance, we've talked about sort of college life and beyond. But when someone leaves a Pen Masala concert or they listen to a Pen Masala song, maybe even for the first time, what curiosities, what questions do you hope they're asking themselves right after that?
First question is like, how can I listen to more? That's the question that I'm always asking. I
want the right, get me more of that.
But yeah, I feel like, I think the main question I hope that they ask is like, it's like, how is this possible? Sort of, you know, like, how are we able to make a blend like this fluid is like the question that I hope that they ask, that they're like kind of like enchanted by the idea. I think acapella is so cool because like, you can like make these transitions between songs so fluid. Like it's such a, like the voice as an instrument is such a flexible thing that like you can do so many like clean transitions between songs because of it. So I just hope that they're asking questions about like acapella as an art form, about fusion music generally.
One thing I hope they'd ask is, how did it go so long? How's it still going? I mean, different bands, different artists have like come and gone in the last 26 years, but Masala has stayed. It's been there before I was born, and it'll be there after I die. So I hope people have an appreciation for that and how much hard work it takes to keep this thing going.
Yeah, I think like just genuine curiosity, and I think there's so many questions to ask. Like, how is this like how is this group like even function? Like, if you think about it, it's like a group that's performing for like what, 27 years. Like, aren't like they probably stopped performing by now, but like I think there's so many like intricacies to like how we rotate every 4 years, how there's like different positions, like how we release new albums, and like just so much like different, like how like different like the experience for like an a cappella group, specifically Pen Masala, is to like different like other bands that may not have the same like structure.
Well, the art form of a cappella, the legacy behind it, and the functionality of the group are all great questions I know people are asking, and as you, Pratik, said, are continuing to be enchanted by all the music and the creation. Thank you all so much for joining us. It's been really a treat, and I hope we can host you guys again for another conversation down the road.
Thanks so much. Yeah, we'd love to.
Yeah, thank you so much.
This was awesome. Yeah.
Thanks so much, Pen Masala. And a quick shout out to my beloved New York Medical College Arrhythmias. You all know who you are. Of course, on a far more serious note, it goes without saying, but every human life has value, and Jahnavi Kandula's death demands justice, accountability, and a rigorous examination of why such erosion of professional culture exists in the people particularly charged with enforcing the law and protecting our communities. We must do much, much better. Till next time, I'm Abhay Darnekar.